sporty Olympic greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young. Welcome to a special Olympic edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. It's the 11th full day of action at the Rio Olympics in Brazil. Taking a look at the medals table as of 1600 GMT UTC Tuesday, the United States is at the top with 78 medals, 27 gold, 24 silver, and 27 bronze. China is in second place with 47 medals, 15 gold, 14 silver, and 18 bronze. And Britain is in third place with 41 medals, 16 gold, 17 silver, and 8 bronze. Kenya won its second gold medal when world record holder David Rudisha successfully defended his 800-meter Olympic title. Running two laps around a rain-soaked track, Rudisha clocked an impressive 1 minute 42.15 seconds, more than a second off the world record he set 4 years ago at the London Olympics. The 27-year-old Rudisha delivered a dominant last lap, and he described his Rio gold as the greatest moment of his career. David Rudisha is the first man since New Zealander Peter Snell in 1964 to successfully defend the 800-meter Olympic title. Elsewhere, world champion Anita Lodarczyk of Poland underlined her absolute dominance of the women's hammer throw by winning the gold medal with a world record distance of 82.29 meters. Meanwhile, on Monday's Sunny Side of Sports, I mentioned South African runner Wade van Niekerk setting a new 400-meter world record of 43.03 seconds. Van Niekerk says he's blessed to be an Olympic champion.
It's amazing. I think it's something that I'm really grateful for, and I give the Lord full credit for blessing me with the talent that he's given me and giving me the discipline to follow through with it.
World record holder Wade Van Niekerk followed through with the fastest lap ever. A spectacular run in which he defeated former Olympic champions Kerani James of Grenada and LaShawn Merritt of the USA.
No, it was amazing. I mean, it was quality athletes that I competed against. It was a very, very challenging experience coming out here 3 days back-to-back racing each other. And yeah, I'm just grateful that I can tick off the world record under my name. It's a real blessing.
The South African athlete also says it's a real blessing to receive so many congratulatory messages and phone calls, including one from Jamaican star Usain Bolt after his world record run.
I'm overwhelmed by all the quality and amazing sports stars all over the world coming out and congratulating me. It's something I really cherish.
Meanwhile, Kerani James, the 2012 Olympic gold medalist at 400 meters, had to settle for the silver this time around. Kerani says it was a thrill just to take part in such a landmark Olympic race.
I think it was a historic moment, and I think Wade, the last couple of years has been very consistent, has been having a lot of great performances. So, just seeing him break the world record, I think was very exciting just to be in that race. And like I said, I'm just happy to be a part of that history.
The history books will tell us that American Michael Johnson's 17-year-old world record of 43.18 seconds was broken in Rio de Janeiro. Kerani James comments on Johnson's mark.
I think it was going to last a little bit longer, but, in this sport, anything is possible, and anything could happen at any given time. So this is what happened, and it shows how much, the sport is growing and how much more people are understanding the events, and it just shows that, there's always something new going on, and it's always something exciting.
That's Kerani James of Grenada, who won the 400 meters silver medal at the Rio Olympics in Brazil. And Karani was speaking from Rio de Janeiro. Joining us now from Rio is our friend Luis Piazzet. Sporty Olympic greetings, Luis. What's the good news?
Sporty Olympic greetings, Sonny. The Brazilian good news is that from the 30th place on the board of medals, the Smiley and Party Nation jumped 6.03 meters to the 16th, almost there to finish the Olympic Games in Rio among the top 10. Thiago Braz won the second gold medal for Brazil in the pole vault. Thiago is another named sergeant, military athlete of the Brazilian team. This unveils a non-inclusive model of athleticism in the Olympic host country. Thiago Braz lives in Italy, coached by the renowned Ukrainian Vitaly Petrov, and he is maintained by the following financial scam. The Brazilian Ministry of Sports dedicated a certain amount of money as a sponsorship package to the Army and to the Brazilian Olympic Committee. Few potential Olympic athletes are carefully selected and sent out to well-structured training centers, not rarely abroad. Within the country grows on the media the image of the winner-sponsored athletes when they win, while the athleticism and all its positive outputs do not grow in Brazil without seeding in its own soil. On another sport venue, the Olympic swimming pool is still green, dirty, with visible rusty metal tubing bleeding rust to the water. The water pump hoover and chemical treatment fails, and the organizers are still saying they will fix it. They may need to drain out and refill it with new water. In the meantime, the president of the Water Sports Brazilian Confederation, Guaraci Nunes, is under investigation of financial misconduct. On the saltwater venue, today will be the medal day of the sailing. In its own backyard, the Brazilian promises are way behind to make it even to the bronze. Although miracles can happen in the city of the Christ Redeemer, winds are favorable for sailing. Although yesterday less than half an hour of a gust of about 35 knots only were enough to knock down several Olympic structures all over the city. Tall sponsors' banners and signs, several fencing structures avoiding pedestrians to enter certain areas, were destroyed completely or severely damaged. In the main sport Olympic arena at Barra, a cable television camera of the official broadcasting company fell over the spectators, injuring at least 7 people, including children. The British witness Chris Adams describes the moment the aerial television camera fell in the Olympic Park.
And I was on the bridge, and the area on the bridge above there is cornered off, basically because the camera was up over the bridge at the top, and it had stopped, and there was an extra cable, an extra black cable, that was pulled down. Suddenly, I was looking around, I looked at the camera thinking, come on, I can't go any further. And then suddenly you heard a big snap on the cable and the camera came down at an angle, hit these two women here, and before the camera obviously hit the floor and then the glass went everywhere, hit these two ladies. You could see one of the ladies may have, I can't see from the bridge, but looks like a facial injury. And then after that, the medical team came. And after the medical team came, they took the two women off and cornered the area off.
Fun and lots of smiley faces you see wherever you go in the city, except near the slams where not even the national force is allowed to enter. Like yesterday afternoon, 3/4 from the Copacabana beach, where the police had another round of shooting with drug dealers at the foot of Morro do Pavãozinho. Yesterday, a social media page of the U.S. Embassy in Brazil published avoided areas of the city and safety procedures for American citizens visiting Brazil. I'm Luis Piazzet for the Sony Side of Sports in Rio de Janeiro.
Some sad Olympic news out of Rio. Germany's canoe slalom coach, Stefan Henze, died from injuries he suffered when a taxi he was in crashed near Rio Olympic Park on Friday. He was 35. Germany is honoring Henze, a canoe slalom silver medalist at the 2004 Olympics on this Tuesday. The German flag is being flown at half staff at the Olympic venues in Rio. International Olympic Committee President Thomas Bach, who is German, said, and I quote, "Our sympathy is with the family of Stefan Henze, his friends, and all of the German Olympic team." After initially being treated for head injuries at a hospital after Friday's crash, Henze was transferred to a clinic that specializes in neurosurgery. German canoe team official Christian Kading, who was in the taxi with Henze, was released after being treated for minor injuries. Germany's canoe slalom team tweeted a photo of Henze on Monday with a note that translates to, "We are deeply saddened. Rest in peace, Stefan. You'll remain forever in our hearts." Well, for every Olympics, the Athletes Village is created to house the thousands of people who will take part in the sporting events. But what about the thousands of journalists who cover the games? Where do they all stay? While many are in hotels scattered about the host city, most stay in so-called media villages, typically new high-rises in the suburbs where apartments will be rented or sold after the games. VOA's Park Brewer and his VOA colleagues are staying in one of them west of downtown Rio.
This home away from home is simply called Barra Media Village 1. Number 2 is across the road, and together the two large complexes house more than 2,500 journalists. The new facility is 30 minutes from the Olympic Park, but about 90 minutes from iconic Copacabana Beach. One other large media village is a little closer to downtown Rio. Like much of the pre-Rio Games infrastructure, the buildings were built against the clock, which, according to Dirk Gerlo, a Belgian radio and TV reporter who has covered 8 Olympics, means they have their drawbacks.
You enter the apartment, and then you see that, of course, they had to do this really rapidly. In our apartment, we had some problems with the toilets, with the showers, and so on.
Gerlo told VOA that conditions in this media village are a call to humility.
You know, it is low budget. You see it. You cannot compare it with what we have, for example, in Belgium. But you have to realize that they've done a rather good job in very difficult times. So I accept the accommodation.
Gerlo also commented on the village food.
It's basic, but it's okay. Yeah, I accept it. You have to live with it. We're all used to so much luxury, and then I think, okay, let's just accept this and do our job.
You can find almost anything you might need or want at the media village, like free internet, a workout room, and even a laundromat where you can wash your clothes for free, if you can get a machine. Like most reporters, Allison Morrow from a television station in the United States says there is little spare time to enjoy the amenities.
I really like it here. I was really pleasantly surprised. I have my own bathroom, the air conditioning works, the bed's kind of hard, but my back does pretty well with that. I'm poolside, I look out on the pool. I mean, I'm never here, so I can't go in the pool, but I like it here. And they've got this commissary, which has everything that you need, really, so I don't know. It's made things a lot easier. I think it could be a lot worse.
That convenience store with higher prices than traditional supermarkets is the oasis for Media Village residents, says Anna Beatriz, one of the store clerks.
Here the tourists buy most beer and water, and sometimes they do buy snacks too. Sometimes foods for microwave when they're starving.
And at the end of a long day of covering the summer games, there is even a bar that stays open late for those who still have the energy for a drink or two before heading off to bed. Park Brewer, VOA News at the Rio Olympics.
Joining us once again on the sunny side of sports is Dan Friedel of the Voice of America's Learning English Department. Sporty Olympic greetings, Dan.
Hi, Sonny. Happy to be here. It's now we're in the middle of the second week. It's gone by quickly, and we're getting to see a handful of new athletes after what seemed like a week of gymnastics and swimming pretty much exclusively.
Yeah, some of these new stars making a name for themselves. But Dan, let's go back to Park Brewer's report talking about the media villages where reporters stay during an Olympics. You've got some history with these media villages, don't you?
So, Sonny, I've been at three Summer Olympics in my sports reporting career. I started off in 2000 in Sydney, and we stayed at a nice modern hotel in the downtown part of Sydney. So everything was pretty smooth there, just like any other hotel in a big city. In 2004, I was at the Athens Olympics, and we did stay in a media village very similar to the one Park described. We were 30, 35 minutes outside of the main media center, and I remember it was sometimes hard to figure out which bus to get on to, you know, especially after a late shift, you know, 2, 3 in the morning, figure out which bus to get on to get back to where we were staying. That building is probably pretty similar to the one that Park was reporting on. I'll be happy to give you some details.
The four-time Olympic champion, Dan Allison Felix, she's been around for a few Olympics herself. She's in headlines today in the United States for kind of a spectacular finish in the women's 400 meters final. Tell our Voice of America listeners about that.
So Allison Felix is one of the best American women track and field athletes of all time. She had a great medal haul in London. She came onto the scenes a number of years ago as a young track and field athlete. Her best event actually is the 200 meter. She didn't qualify because she had an injury, so she wasn't able to get into that race this year. So she was really focused on running the 400, which was last night. The rain was a factor the track and field outdoor events last night. Even the wind was a factor in the diving, as far as I am told. The 400-meter race came down to a photo finish, and it was a pretty unique photo finish. The sprinter from the Bahamas, Shawnee Miller, and Felix were basically step for step in the last 50 meters or so. Felix was ahead, but Miller was gaining. And she dove. Miller dove forward with her hands ahead of her feet as she crossed the finish line, and Felix stayed upright. And Miller was awarded the gold medal as a very small fractional victory. The difference between her and Felix was probably about the length from your hand, you know, your wrist to your fingertips. It was pretty amazing to see that.
And one of my colleagues was asking me if that was legal, what Miller did, that dive. And in fact, it is legal at the Olympic level.
It's dramatic and it's perfectly legal. I'm reading here, the rules state that the win is determined by which athlete has any part of her torso cross the line first. So as long as her torso, the front part of her chest, crossed the line first, that was enough. So it was pretty amazing. A lot of people hadn't seen something like that before. It's similar to when base runners in baseball running down the first base line, they dive for first base. And there's always the debate about whether if you run through or you dive, which one gets there first.
Dan, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOASunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOASunnySports. If you go to my Facebook page, you'll see a nice photo of South Africa's new world record holder, Wade van Niekerk, setting his new 400-meter world record of 43.03 seconds. And we heard from Wade earlier in the show saying he's blessed to be an Olympic champion. Dan, let's get back to the journalists covering this 31st Olympiad in Rio. Sally Jenkins, she's one of the top female sports columnists here in the United States. She's in Rio, and she expressed concerns today in the Washington Post about some of the theft that's taking place in Brazil. And I'll read an excerpt from her column. Sally writes, "Actually, Rio's street crime is not nearly as concerning as the visibly sloppy, haphazard security inside the venues. On the day of the opening ceremony, Sports Illustrated magazine installed a $10,000 camera on the roof of Maracanã Stadium. The only people who were supposedly allowed up there were security and specifically accredited personnel. The camera was stolen." She goes on to write that Agence France-Presse photo agency has lost 10 cameras worth an estimated $45,000 from inside venues. And on a VOA level, one of our Voice of America reporters in Rio, Hassel Tobias, shortly after arriving in Brazil, he had $30,000 worth of equipment stolen from him. And he chased after the robbers, but he did not get the equipment back. But still, it definitely seems like a problem there in Rio, Dan.
The big story from over the weekend was the story about the American swimmer Ryan Lochte getting robbed. A few of his friends and he were in a taxi cab that was stopped in traffic, and their wallets and cash were taken, but their credentials were not taken.
Mm.
So it is definitely part of the foreign travel experience. I think that anybody who is not used to being in a particular city, in a particular neighborhood, and they might look like they're from a different country, the skin color or perhaps the clothing they're wearing, that is something that people have to be aware of. And somebody who is a little more cynical might say, well, that's part of the experience of foreign travel. Sometimes you get ripped off. It's tough to see that some of these news organizations that are expecting some level of security are not getting that. I've been in plenty of the media villages where you have to go through security just to get in. I've been in the press center, the broadcast center, and my recollection is that there was pretty strong security outside and inside.
Mm.
You know, these journalists make their home at the press center. It's the broadcast center for the electronic media, television and radio, and the press center for the traditional print media. And I think they're supposed to feel comfortable there. And it's too bad that in at least Rio this time, they're not feeling as comfortable as they would like.
Well, Dan, one athlete who seems to be feeling very comfortable in Rio, Usain Bolt, the lightning bolt from Jamaica. He's already won the men's 100 meters. He ran in a preliminary heat for the 200 meters earlier on Tuesday. Do you think the lightning bolt is going to win three more gold medals in Rio?
Well, he talked about this after winning the 100 on Sunday, that he was going to try to go for the world record, to break his own record in the 200, which would be pretty amazing considering he was a much younger man when he was able to do that. One of the things that the 100-meter sprinters were complaining about was there was a fast turnaround on Sunday between the semifinal heats and the final race. They thought that they didn't have enough time to get their energy back and their strong feeling in their legs before that gun sounded for the 100-meter, which is one reason Bolt said that the times were slower overall. And I thought that was interesting. But really, the amazing thing that happened in the semifinals was Bolt won his heat by so much that he was able to look to his left and make a big smile for one of the photographers. That was one of the biggest trending topics. Not even the fact that he won the gold medal on Sunday, but the fact that he had this photo that emerged later on of him making a big smile and being so relaxed. It's pretty amazing to see an athlete like that.
The amazing Usain Bolt. And thank you, Dan Friedel, of the VOA's Learning English Department. And that wraps up the August 16th Olympic edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Thomas Blondet. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A roadmap agreement aimed at forging a path for the parties to engage in political negotiation, leading to ending hostilities and achieving broader political reconciliation in Sudan through a national dialogue, was signed by members of the Sudan Call Alliance of opposition groups. Signatories to the roadmap agreement include the Justice and Equality Movement Jibril, the Sudan Liberation Movement Mini Manawi, the Sudan People's Liberation Movement North, and the National Umma Party. The U.S., U.K., Norway, Germany, and the European Union welcomed the signing of the roadmap agreement, saying it constitutes a valuable step towards ending the wars in Sudan. We urge the signatories to lose no further time in agreeing to a cessation of hostilities and modalities for humanitarian access in Darfur and the two areas. The U.S. and its allies also commended the government of Sudan for signing the agreement on March 16th. The resumption of intensified fighting in 2011 between the Sudanese Army and Sudan People Liberation Movement North in the southern regions of Kordofan and Blue Nile was a remnant of the civil war between the SPLMA and the central government of Khartoum, and reflects the lack of implementation of the comprehensive peace agreement before and after South Sudan declared independence. The conflict in Darfur began in 2003, when ethnic tribes took up arms against the central government of Khartoum to protest against political, economic, and social ethnic marginalization. The roadmap agreement marks the first time Sudan's political and armed opposition groups jointly signed a deal with a government since fighting broke out in 2011. The accord lays out the process for a permanent ceasefire, the mechanism for the opposition to participate in a national dialogue with the government, and includes provisions for negotiating an immediate humanitarian aid. The United States and its partners encourage opposition parties in Sudan to seize this opportunity to come together through a process of dialogue to achieve a political settlement addressing the challenges that continue to face their people. Likewise, the government of Sudan should take all steps necessary to ensure a conducive environment for peace to succeed.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African music mix on The Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African music mix plays only the best.
Yes, sir. Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.